Begin the current daf, Masechtas Avodazara daf Chafei. Begin in the top line of the Amud, where the Gemara continues in a related discussion from the previous daf, and that is we had been discussing the halacha of our Mishnah regarding the suspicion that we have with non-Jews and being secluded with animals because of bestiality, which got into the discussion, can we buy animals from them for kabbanis, which are invalid if they were nirva, which then got into a discussion, one of the proofs was that we see that the animals that brought up the Aron from the lands of the Pelishtim, and we still would use it as karbanis, so we see the not suspect. So in that, the Gemara got into that discussion of that incident which happened regarding that those animals came and they were singing songs of praise to Hashem as they brought up the ark from the Pelishtim on their own. Now, since in that discussion there was a machlekes Rabbi Elazar and Shmuel ben Nachmeni in explaining that pasuk of Vayishrena, so therefore the Gemara quotes this pasuk over here that also talks about their machlekes and how to interpret this pasuk of Vayamar HaShemesh, which is a pasuk in Sefer Yeshua when he was fighting with the five kings who were laying siege on the Givinim. So the pasuk says as follows: Vayidah HaShemesh, that the sun was silent, meaning it stopped singing its song, which as long as the sun is in motion, it's not silent. Here it was silent. Vayireyach amad, and the moon stood, and when it stood, it was silent. Now, in place of them, Yeshua sang a shira. In place of them, like it says over there, Azidab Yeshua Hashem, B'yim Teis Hashem, that he sang the song. But during this wondrous miracle, Yeshua had the sun and the moon stop. Adikim goy oyvav, until a nation took revenge on its enemies, meaning the Jewish people conquered their enemies. Halohi ksuva sefa yasha, behold, this was already written in the book of the upright that there was going to be such a miracle for Yeshua in his days. Says the Gemara, my sefa yasha, what is this reference of the book of the upright which was already alluding to this miracle of Yeshua that he's going to have the sun and the moon stop? This refers to Sefer Bereishis, which talks about the Maisa Avis, the actions of Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov, which are written over there. Shenikru Yisham, where they're called the upright. How do we know that? Shenem, like it says in Bamidbar, that Bilam requested regarding himself, Thomas Navshi Mais Yisham, let my soul die the death of the upright, where he wanted to pass away like the Avis, Avram, Yitzchak, Yaakov. Now, so it says the Gemara of Hecher and Mises, so where is it alluded to in Sefer Bereishis that there was going to be such a miracle for Yeshua like this happened? Now, Yeshua is from Shevet Ephraim, like the pasuk says, Mamidbu Yud Gimel, Lamate Ephraim, Hoshea Ben Nun. Now, it says regarding Ephraim, by Birchas Yaakov, when Yaakov benched his sons, so he's benching the Shvatim, which included Menash and Ephraim, so it says over there in the pasuk in Bereishis, Vizara Yim Eloi HaGoyim, and his sons, his children will be filling up the nations, meaning all the world will be filled with the fear of Ephraim. Now, the question is, when is it going to be that his fear is going to fill up the whole world? Generally, if a person conquers a nation, wins a war over here, so people in Spain don't know about it. Rather, says the Gemara, when the sun stood still for Yeshua, then that was visible to the whole world, because everyone sees the sun, and they were all fearful of Yeshua. That was what was alluded to in Sefer Bereishis. Now, it says in the Pasuk, V'yamet HaShemesh, that the sun stood still, B'chatzi HaShemayim, in the middle of the sky, V'le'atz Lavei, and it wasn't pushing to set, K'yayim Tamim, like a full day. Now, the wording sounds like that there was two delays. One was B'chatzi HaShemayim, one was in the middle of the day by noon, and one was when it was timed for setting, it didn't push to set. So ask the Gemara V'kama, how long did it delay? Because the pasuk says v'le'atz lavai, it didn't push to set, rather it delayed like a yom tamim, like a full day, which is 24 hours, because a day is only complete when you have the night and the day. So that's 24 hours. So how long was that day? So Rabbi Shimon Levi says, Esrim v'abashay. That day, from sunrise to sunset, to when the stars come out, was itself a full day. And that includes both the movement of the sun and the delay of the sun, as the Gemara explains. Shimon Levi says, Azal Shist. First the sun went for 6 hours until it came to noon, middle of the sky. Then Vekam Shist. Then it's, like it says in the Pasuk, V'yamar HaShemesh, then it stayed for 6 hours in one place. Then Azal Shist. It continued going another 6 hours till nightfall. And then Vekam Shist. Then right before sunset, it stopped for another 6 hours, like it says, V'lo Atz Lavi. So Kula Milsa, so the whole thing, meaning the movement of the sun and its delays, was Kiyam Tamim, like a full day, which was the 24 hours of what in a normal day is night and day. Here, in the daytime itself, was a 24-hour period. That's one opinion. Rabbi Elazar, he says, Shleishim Vishis, that when it says in the Pasuk, Yom Tamim, was actually only going on the Amida, meaning the delays were for 24 hours. And therefore, including the regular daytime, which is 12 hours, was for a total of 36 hours, as the Gemara explains. Azal Shis, so it went for 6 hours. Then it stopped in the middle of a Kum Tracer, so it stopped for 12 hours. Azal Shis then went for another 6 hours until evening time, become trace, and then stood another 12 hours before it got dark. So Amidasik Yem Tamim, its delay was a full day of 24 hours. So that makes for a total of just the daytime period was 36 hours. A third opinion, Shmuel ben Nachmanim, he says, Arbam Ushmeina. It was 48 hours. Meaning when the Pasuk there says Yem Tamim, it was only on the delay of right before sunset. Because regarding the first half of the Pasuk, it doesn't say that was Kiyem Tamim. And because it only says on the second half, when it's ending off, it says Le'atz Lavei Kiyem Tamim. That was at the end. But it doesn't talk about what its delay was by noontime. So generally, when it says something stops, we would say it would be for 12 hours, which is, and it stops the way it normally stops, which is at nighttime, which is when the sun is not shining. Those 12 hours is what it's had during its noontime break. So as the Gemara explains, he holds Azal Shis, it went for 6 hours, become trace and then stop for 12 hours. Azal Shis and then for another 6 hours, become Esther Mabah, and then it stopped for 24 hours. Shlomo says in the Pasuk, V'li Atz Lavei, it didn't push to set, which was about to be nighttime, but it just wasn't becoming night, Kiyem Tamim, like a full day. Machlal Dimikara Lav Kiyem Tam Hava. So the inference is that the first time it stopped was not like a full day, rather it was a regular delay, which is how long does a day usually delay, is at nighttime, which is 12 hours, so that makes for a total of that time from sunrise to Tzeisak HaRavim was an entire period of 48 hours. Now, Ikadam, that those that say that all these three measurements of these different opinions is Petesefta Pligi, is not like we explained before regarding the full time period, but rather how much was added onto a regular day, that's what they were disagreeing about. Now, Rabbi Shimon Levi Amma said, Esther Varba, meaning the additional part was 24 hours, meaning he holds that when it says Yom Tamim was on the delay. So Azal Shis, the sun went for 6 hours, then by noon the Bekam Tracer stopped for 12 hours. Azal Shis went for another 6 hours, Bekam Tracer then stopped for 12 hours, which is Amidasu Kiyam Tamim. When it says it was Kiyam Tamim, means that the whole daytime period, its delay was a full day of 24 hours, which makes 24 plus 12, which would be, according to him, 36 hours. Rabbi Elazar, he says, Shleishim B'sheish. The addition was 36 hours. So he says that the Yom Tam that the Pasuk talks about was on the delay of Le'atz Lavei. Now the first delay, where it doesn't say how long that was for 12 hours, as normally a sun stops, which is at nighttime. That's what it had at noontime. So he says, Azal Shis went for 6 hours. V'kam Tracer stopped for 12 hours. Azal Shis went for another 6 hours. V'kam Esther Mabah, and then it, right before it got dark, it stopped for 24 hours because V'le'atz Lavei, that it didn't push to set, Kiyam Tamim, that's what is like a full day. But the inference is, but the earlier one was not Kiyam Tamim, rather that was like a stop of 12 hours. The third opinion, Shmuel ben Nachmanim, he says, Arbam B'Shmeina, the addition was 48 hours. Where Azal Shis went for 6 hours, become Esther Mabah, it stopped by noon for 24 hours. Azal Shis went another 6 hours, become Chavtal, and then it stopped there again for 24 hours, because he holds that, yeah, the Kiyam Tamim is going on the delay of Le'atz Lavei. However, this is what he disagrees with the previous opinion, because Makish Amidasei, he compares the delay of Chatzi HaShemayim of noontime, Le'biyasei, to the when it was going to set, when it says Le'atz Lavei. Which Ma'biyasei, Kiyam Tamim, just like when it was delaying before it was setting, was like a full day of 24 hours, Af Amidasei, Kiyam Tamim, so too the delay of noontime was also like a full day, which makes its addition 48 hours, besides the 12 hours of a regular daytime. Now, Tanu Len Nebraisa, Kshem Sha'amdulei Chama LeYeshua, just like the sun stood still for Yeshua, Kach Amdulei Chama LeMoshe, so too it stopped for Moshe Rabbeinu, Ul Nakdimin Ben Gurion, for someone of a Talmudic figure known as Nakdimin Ben Gurion. As the Gemara explains, Yeshua is Kroy, is Psukim, as we just said. Nakdimin Ben Gurion is a Gemara, it's the tradition that we have, which is brought up in Sechtes Tainus, your Testament Beis, where one nobleman went and lent him 10 springs, and there was a whole incident where Hashem ended up holding up the sun to have it fill up with water, that he could pay back the springs. Says Gemara L'Moshe Ben Olan, where do we know by the Muhammad that Moshe Ben had with Sichain that the sun stood still for him too? So we know that because of Gzeres Shava. Asya Achel Achel, we learn out the word begin that it says by Moshe Ben from the word Achel that it says elsewhere. Ksivach, it says over here by Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim, Ochel teis pachtecha. Begin to give your fear and like your awe and your fear, like it says on all the nations that are on that are beneath the heavens, which means that the whole world hears about it. Which is this idea about, like we said with Yeshua, that when the sun stops, the whole world finds out about it. It says also by Yeshua, Ochel gadelch. It says the same word Ochel, that it will begin your greatness, just like by him he had the miracle. So to my Moshe Rabbeinu, over Rabbi Yechonam, he gives a different gzeir shav. He says asi taste from the word give. It says by Moshe Rabbeinu, Ochel teis pachtecha, begin to give your fear. It says by Yeshua, b'yom teis Hashem es Amori, that in the day that Hashem will give the Amorites into the Jewish people, just like by him he had the miracle of keeping up the sun, so too by Moshe Rabbeinu. A third interpretation, Shmuel ben Nachman Yom, he says, megufi de krush amalei. You know it from the pasuk itself of Moshe Rabbeinu, you don't even need to learn it out from Gzeir Shav from Yeshua. Because it says over there by Moshe Rabbeinu, ash yishmun shemacha, that they will hear your hearing, v'rogzu v'chol mepenecha, they will tremble, they will fear in front of you, which the Gemara explains, emesai rogzu v'chol mepenecha, when will they tremble and fear in front of you? That's b'shosh shamdu lecham l'moshe, that's a time which is such a frightful thing, the sun is stopping, that doesn't happen, when the sun stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu, that is what the pasuk is referring to, that's how we know the sun stood still for Moshe Rabbeinu also. Now the Gemara asks, but meisve, that it says in the pasuk in Yeshua, v'lohoyu kayyim hahu l'fanav v'achem, that there wasn't such a day, never before Yeshua, never afterwards. So how could we say that it was by Moshe Rabbeinu too? Then it did happen before him. Says the Gemara, ibay same, if you want, you could say, shas hu d'lehav nefisha kuli hayet, the amount of hours that it stopped by Yeshua, that never was and never will be. Or ibay same, if you want, you could say, avnei barid lehav, the hailstones of rocks, that which by Yeshua came down on the enemy, that wasn't by Moshe Rabbeinu, that never was and never will be. The Chassid says in Pasuk Yeshua, says, Vehi benusim ebnei b'nei Yisrael, when they were fleeing from in front of the Jewish people, he b'moyred beis chayron, they were on the descent of beis chayron, v'Hashem hishlech aleim avonim gedoilis min Hashemayim, Hashem was throwing down on them huge rocks from heaven, ad azeka v'yemus until azeka, and they died, that was a miracle that never was and never will be. Now, a similar type of a discussion, which we said with Sefer Hayasha, which was the previous Gemara's discussion, referring to Sefer Hayasha. So the Gemara says, Ksiv, there's a pasuk in Shmuel Beis, which is in the lamentation of David lamental regarding Shaul. It says there in the pasuk that David HaMelech said to Yemen, he said, Lamid b'nei Yehuda kashas, to teach to the people, the sons of Yehuda, of Shevet Yehuda, the archer's bow. Hine ksuva, behold, that it's written that the sons of Yehuda will be those who shoot the bow and arrow, the archery. It's written al Sefer Hayasha, in the book of the upright. It says Gemara, my Sefer Hayasha. What's the book of the upright? Amar Pchibar Abba, Amar Yechanan, Zeh Sefer Avram Yisrael Yaakov, Shenikar Yisharim. This refers to Sefer, in the Sefer Torah, which refers to the acts of Avram Yisrael Yaakov and the Jewish people, which they're called upright. Tachsev Behu, like it says in the Pasuk of Bamidbar, Thomas Nafshi Moist Yisharim. Like we said before, the Bilam said, let my soul die the death of the upright. But Tiyachris Yisrael, let my end be like them. Now, Vehecher Amiza, where is it alluded to in the parts that talk about the Maisa Avos of Avraham Yitzchak Yaakov in Bereishis? So the Pasuk says in Bereishis that by Birchas Yaakov, he said, Yehuda, when he was talking about to his son Yehuda, Ati Yeducha Achicha, you, your brothers, will acknowledge, Yadcha Ba'eva Yevecha, your hand will be in the nape, the back of the neck, of your enemies. Explains the Gemara, Ve'ezu Melchama Shetzicha Yad Keneged Arv, what's the type of war that a person needs that his hand will be opposite his neck? Havaim Zukeshes. That refers to someone that has to pull the arrow from the bow, where he puts his hand like opposite his eyes because he pulls it all the way back to where his neck is so that the arrow could shoot out. That we see already that it's alluded to, this idea that David HaMelech was saying, it's alluded to that B'nai Yehuda are going to be Meishchei Keshes in Sefer Yashar and Sefer Bereishis, where that's what Yaakov told to Yehuda, that they're the ones who are Be'orif HaYevecha, which is the art of archery. Rabbi Loza, I mean, he says, Sefer Yashar is actually Zeh Sefer Mishneh Torah, refers to Sefer Devar. For my carly, Sefer Yashar, why is it called the Book of the Upright? Because it says in Sefer Devar, Vasisa Yashar V'atayv Be'in Hashem, that you should do the upright and the good in the eyes of Hashem. So the whole Sefer is called by that fundamental principle. So says the Gemara of Hecher Mizah, so where is this idea alluded to that B'nai Yehuda are the ones who shoot the arrow? Where is that alluded to in Sefer Devar? Because it says in the Pasig, Yadav Ravle, which just refers to also the bracha for Shevet Yehuda, that his hands will fight for him. Now, Ve'ezim Alchama Shetzichesh Te'yadayim, what's a war that one needs? Like it says, Yadav, in the plural, that it needs two hands, because a sword you could hold one hand. What's something that needs two hands? Avayim Zukeshes. That's the bow and arrow. You have to hold the bow in one hand and the arrow in the other one. That alludes to Shevet Yehuda, and Sefer Yasha, and Sefer Devarim. A third interpretation of Shmuel Nachmeni Amar, he says this Sefer Shevetim. This refers to Sefer Shevetim in Navi. Why is it called the book of the upright? Because it says in Sefer Shevetim, but Yom Ha'ayim, in those days, Ein Melech B'Yisrael, there was no king in the Jewish people. Ish Hayasha Be'inam Yasa, every man did what was upright in his eyes. So we see that that Sefer, that time, that whole period in history, that the epoch is called Yasha. Now, Vehech Ramiza, where is alluded to in Sefer Shevetim, this idea that B'nai Yehuda are the Moshe Keshes? Like it says over there, Laman Das Darius Bnei Yisrael, that it should be known for the generations of the Jewish people, Lalam de Muhammad, to teach them warfare. Now, Ve'ez Muhammad Shatrich Alimud, what is the warfare that needs to be taught? Everyone knows how to use a sword. Havalim Zukeshes, that's archery, which is an art that has to be taught. Ubanam de Behudik Sivan, how do we know that what's told about teaching the Jewish people how to fight with archery that refers to Shevet Yehuda? It says in the beginning of Sefer Shevetim, Mi Yalalana, who's going to bring us up, Ela Kanani Batchila, that's the Girsa, to the Kananim in the beginning, Leilachim, but to fight a war with them. V'yem Hashem, and Hashem said, Yehudi Yal, Yehud will go up. And so we see that generally when it talks about fighting war in Sefer Shevetim, it's referring to Shevet Yehuda, and we see that they had to be taught this art of archery. Now the Gemara continues, also, for the same idea as the previous Gemara's discussion, according to the Machlekes Amiram, so it talks about this next discussion. It says in the Pasuk in Shmuel Aleph, Vayorim hatavach es hasheik v'olehu. So the cook picked up the shank, which is some type of the thigh of the area of the animal, v'olehu, and what was on top of it. And Vayosim of the shal, and he put it in front of shal. So ask him in my Bala, what does it mean what was on top of the shank? So on that, Rabbi Yechonama, he says, Sheik V'Aliyah, refers to the shank and the tail. And my Vale, why is it called what's on top of the shank? The Misamcha Sheik V'Aliyah, it's because the shank bone supports the tail. Because the tail is above the shank bone, and therefore it's leaning, it rests on the shank bone. Now the shank is the part of the sinew, the part of the muscle of the, which is the meat part of the animal, which is between the thigh and the ankle. That's the shank, and the lower limbs, which is what the shank is, supports what's on top of it, which is the tail. So that's why the tail is called what's on top of it. Rabbi Lazar, I mean, he says, it refers to shank v'chaza. It's the shank bone with the breast. Maivalev, so why is that called what's on top of it? It's not even the same part of the animal. It's the machas la l'chaza ilavad the shank. It's because we place the breast on top of the shank, which is at a time when a person is bringing a carbon shlamim, which there's two parts that have to be brought up. Ki boya nufe, when you want to do tnufa, which is one of the services that have to be done on carbon shlamim, you put the breast on top of the shank, umanafe, then you do tnufa. That's why it was called that the breast was on top of the shank. Now, that suda, which Shaul was eating from, even though it was a carbon, and that's why it had the breast on top of the shank, but although it says that, like it says in Shmuel Aleph, Kihu Evarach Hazavach, he was benching the carbon, but still, he was the reason why it was being fed to him, even though he wasn't a Kohen, because that Chazav HaSheik didn't have to go to a Kohen, because it was being sacrificed on a what's called a minor altar. And like the Gemara says in the last parak in Zvachim, Kofi Tesma Beis, that the Chazav HaSheik has to be given to the Kohen by a Bama Gedayla, like by the Mizbeach. But the Chazav HaSheik doesn't have to be given to the Kohen by Baba Gitana, but again, that's why it was the Chaz on top of the Sheik, because it was a carbon. Rabbi Shmuel ben Achmeni, he says a third interpretation, it was sheik v'sheifi, it was the shank and the rounded part of the hip, which surrounds the thigh bone. And my valet, why was it called what's on top of it? Because sheifi ilove de sheikoi, because that part of the hip bone is on top of the shank. It's literally on that by that limb, and that's why it was called what was on top of it. The Gemara continues to explain the halacha of a Mishnah, which are the relationships we have with non-Jews, with specific idol worshippers, the Kechavim. So the Mishnah says, "Lo tisyachad ish imam," a woman is not allowed to be secluded with them. Says the Gemara, "B'mayiskin," what is the case talking about? Ilema, if we would say b'chad, if that's what sounds like with them, meaning a man cannot be secluded with a non-Jewish man cannot be secluded with a Jewish woman. So what the kavasuga b'swam ishawa, and but if that same case by a Jewish man would be permitted, but for Tanan, the Mishnah teaches in Kedushin that lo yisachid ish echad, that a single man cannot be secluded, one person cannot be secluded even in shtei nashim, even with two women, because in halacha it's called nashim dait and kalis, they can be easily seduced even if it's two women and one man. So for sure one woman, where one man cannot be secluded. So what are you saying, that a Jewish woman cannot be secluded with a non-Jewish man? If even with a Jewish man, she cannot be secluded. So now the Gemara continues on Amud Beis and says, no, Elabit's lost. We're talking about a Jewish woman cannot be secluded even with three non-Jewish men. And the reason why he picks three is because by a Jewish man, if there's three of them, then whether they're in the city or even on the road, it's always going to be permitted. In contrast, when there's two men, then only in the city, then it would be permitted, but on the road, not, because maybe one of the men are going to have to relieve himself, and then the other man is going to be secluded with the erva, with the woman, like the Gemara says, a kedushin. Therefore, that would be problematic, but three is always permitted. But still, the Gemara asks, but the kavasag gabi yisrael beprutza mishari, but do you think that if, let's say, there would be immoral Jewish men, that then a Jewish woman would be permitted to be secluded with three non-appropriate Jewish men? And therefore, if it's not permitted even by Jewish men of low quality, then a non-Jew idolater, why would we have to say that? The same category as a Jew is also forbidden. So why do you have to say, especially, of course, the non-Jew is not going to be a higher moral standing than the Jew? Because Vatanan, we learned within in Masechet Kedushin, it says, Aval Ishaach, it says, but one woman is Mesiached, this Mishnei Anoshim, can be secluded with two men, again, in the ear, in a place that there is people. Vam Rav Yud Mishmoni says, Loishan Elbikshayim. That halacha was only said with upstanding people. Abbeprutzim, but immoral people, afilasar, namiloi, even 10 Jewish men she cannot be secluded with. And Maisahai, there's actually was such an incident, Vitzi'u asar, and 10 pritzim, immoral men that were Jewish, took out a married woman that was a harlot, bemita, with a bed, meaning like as if they were like what's called a coffin, as if they were going to bury a person that the people should not realize that taking out a woman to be mezana with her out of the city to commit a sin with her. So we see even with Jewish men, if there's three of them, if they're immoral, one cannot be secluded with them. For sure, non-Jewish men, what's the necessity of the halacha of our Mishnah? Says the Gemara, loy tzrichin, it was necessary, be'ishtai. If the wife of the non-Jew is imay, is with him, that's what the halacha is coming to teach us. Because Ayvid Kichavim ain't ishtim isham rasay. A non-Jew, his wife does not protect him because she doesn't care. Because as the Gemara says in Masechet Megillah, she does the same type of stuff as he does. So she doesn't care if he's being mazana with a Jewish woman. She'll do it with a different man also. Av Yisrael ishtim isham rasay. But a Jewish man, no matter who he is, his wife is going to protect him, and then it would be permitted to be secluded with the man, as the Mishnah teaches in the Sar Yuchsin, that when his wife is with him, then he could sleep with them in the same hotel, in the same room, because his wife is going to protect him, and there's no problem about yichud with a woman if it was a Jewish man. But by non-Jewish men, then it's not going to help, even with his wife is with him. And that's what the halacha of the Mishnah is teaching us, that a Jewish woman cannot be secluded with non-Jewish men, even if their wives are around, because that's not going to help. But the Gemara has a different question. The tepiklei, but even if we forget about the idea of being sinning immorally, there's another reason why she shouldn't be secluded with non-Jewish men. Mishum shvichas damim, because of murder. As the next halacha of the Mishnah says, that even a Jewish man should not be secluded with non-Jews because they might murder him. So why do you have to say that Jewish woman cannot be secluded because of arayas? Forget about it, because even of murder, she shouldn't be secluded with them. So Madam Rabbi Yirmi, he says, Be'isha chashuva askin, we're talking about a distinguished woman who's distinguished between men and between women, which means she has two characteristics. She's beautiful, and she's also well-connected in the government. Then the non-Jews will be afraid of harming her, and they're not going to kill her. But because of a rias of seduction, that still applies, because she's beautiful. So that's what the Mishnah had to tell us, that she cannot be secluded with them, because although they're not going to murder her, but she might be seduced by them and then have been engaged in an immoral relationship with the non-Jewish man. However, if let's say she's a woman that's not distinguished amongst men, but she's distinguished amongst women, meaning to say that she's beautiful but she's not well connected, then there is a concern because of murder too, because he's going to cohabit with her, and then he's going to murder her. Because this Manda Amr does not hold like the next Manda Amr in the Gemara, that a woman always has her weapons on her. That meaning a non-Jewish man would never murder a woman. He holds he would. And so therefore, in that case, there actually would be a problem about murder. And the other type of case, where she's distinguished amongst men, but not amongst women, meaning she's homely, she's not beautiful, and she's well-connected, then actually it's permitted for her to be secluded with a non-Jewish man, because they're not going to murder her because she's well-connected, and there's no problem about arayis because she's not beautiful. That's the first interpretation, that what's the case that we have to say there's no concern about murder because she's well-connected, but yet she's beautiful, so they might be mezana with her, but they're not going to murder her. Rav Yehuda Amar, he gives a different interpretation. He says, Isha klei zayin aleha, a woman always has her weapons on her, meaning, even if she's not distinguished, not by men, not by women, they're not going to kill her. Rather, what the non-Jewish man will do is he will cohabit with her. Now, once he has relations with her, he's not going to kill her, even if she's not well connected. Now, therefore, had we not told you the concern about arayas, then we would not have been logical to say that it's forbidden to be secluded with them because of murder, because the non-Jewish man does not murder the woman, he just has relations with her, but he's not going to murder her. So ask the Gemara, my benai, what's the difference between them? Because whether according to Rabbi Yirmiyah, who said we're talking about a distinguished woman, that was to tell you why it's also because of arayas. But if she's not distinguished, he said that anyways there's a concern about being secluded because of murder. And also according to Rav Edi, who said that a woman always has her weapons on her, so there's no concern about shvichas damim, about being murdered, but there's always a concern about arayas, and either way she cannot be secluded with a non-Jewish man. So what's the difference? So the Gemara, ikibinayu isha chashuva bein ha-noshim, the difference is a woman who's distinguished amongst men, meaning she's close to the government, but she's not distinguished amongst women. Meaning for men, power, which is government, is considered chashuv ben hanoshim. For women, it's beauty that she's not distinguished amongst women, meaning she's not beautiful. So according to Yirmiyah, that he explained the case, toma by isha chashuv, which sounds like that she's distinguished amongst men and amongst women, meaning she's well connected to the government, so they're not going to kill her. But there's still the concern about arayas because she's beautiful. Here in this case, where she's distinguished amongst men, but not amongst women, there, according to him, she's allowed to be secluded with the non-Jewish man. Because again, there's no concern about murder because she's close to the government, and there's also no concern about arayas because she's ugly. Whereas according to Rav Edi, it would be still forbidden for her to be secluded, because he holds that we're concerned for arayas with all types of women. Because his terminology was, a woman always has her weapons on her, which means to say that there's never going to be concern about murder, because the man will always rather choose to have znus with her. And he doesn't say, oh, here we're talking about a beautiful woman who has her weapons on her. Sounds like she always has her weapons on her, because he would always rather just have znus with her than murder her. And therefore, that's the difference between the two opinions, where we're talking about isha chashuva bein hanoshim, but v'she'ina chashuva bein hanoshim, but she's not distinguished amongst the women. Says the Gemara, Tanik of Asid Ravid Bar Avon, we have a brisa that says like Rav Edi, like the second interpretation of Ravid Bar Avon. Because the brisa says, her isha, which sounds like any woman, af apisha shalom imah, although automatically she has peace with her, meaning that most definitely the non-Jewish man is not going to kill her, because as we said, because she has her weapons on her, he'll always be more seduced by her, but to have relations with her than to murder her. Still says the brisa, loy tisachrim, she should not be secluded with them, memnesha chashud na al arayas, because they're suspect regarding arayas, which is like a vidah bar oven, meaning when it says she has her peace with her, it sounds like she always carries a peacemaking tool. She doesn't need the peace of the government, that type of protection. She always has protection, because a man will be more seduced by having relations with her than actually murdering her, which is like that opinion, in contrast to the first interpretation of Yirmiyah that said there are cases that he would murder her if, let's say, she's not connected and not beautiful. Now the Mishnah said, Lo yisachet adam imon. So not only is there a problem for a woman to be secluded with a non-Jewish man, a Jewish man should not be secluded with them because of shvichas dam, because he might murder him. So related to this idea, Tarambam learned the Braisa, Yisrael shenaz daman loy oivid kechav imederech, if a man encounters an idol worshiper on the road. So taif loy liyiminoi. So what the Jew should have, is he should have the non-Jew walk to the right side of the Jew, because if the non-Jew wants to kill him, so the Jew could just stretch out his right hand and grab a hold of the non-Jew. Well, he'll have his stronger side to the left side of the non-Jew. Now, Rabbi Shmuel ben Yosef Yechim Brikam, he says it depends. He says, Bisayif, if the non-Jew was girdled with a sword, so teifle liyimine, then he should have the non-Jew on his right side, so that the left side of the non-Jew, which is where the sword is usually girdled, because then that's how a person sticks his right hand into the where it's sheathed in the left side and he pulls it out, that should be on the right side of the Jew, so that the Jew could quickly grab it, which is right next to him on his right side, before the non-Jew could go out and pull it out from his left side. But b'makal, if let's say the non-Jew is, generally they hold the stick in their hands, then teiflu l'smoyle, then he should have the non-Jew on his left. which is, because then the right hand of the non-Jew, which is what the stick is in, should be near to the Jew, that if, let's say, he's picking up his right hand to hit the Jew, the left hand of the Jew could quickly grab out the stick that's near him, because if he would have the non-Jew on his right side, then the stick would be very far away from the hand of the Jew, and it would be hard for him to grab it, and more easier for the non-Jew to hurt the Jew. Let's say, Ha'yo'ilim b'malo. Let's say they were going up an incline, let's say a mountain or a rocky terrain, or they're going down a descent. It should never be that the Jew should be down on the lower part and the non-Jew on the higher part. Rather, the Jew should be on the higher part and the non-Jew should be on the lower part, meaning when like they're going up, the Jew should go in front of the non-Jew, which is higher up. It's just that he should have the non-Jew to his right side, but not right behind him. And when they're going down, the non-Jew should go down in front of the Jew. Moreover, even on a flat terrain, the Jew should never bend down in front of the non-Jew to pick up anything. He might smash the Jew's skull. Let's say the idolater is asking the Jew where he's going to. So he should broaden the path, meaning if let's say he had to go only a parsa, he should say he's really going two parsas have to go, because then maybe the idolater will delay killing the Jew until the later part of the journey. But then by that point, he would really have separated from him because he's really not even going that far. Like our father Yaakov did to Esav, the wicked one. So like it says in the Pasuk, that Yaakov told Esav, I know you want to go with me, but don't worry, you go ahead. Until I come to my master, to Seirah, make him believe as if he's going that far. But yet the Pasuk says, Yaakov nasa Sukkos, so that Yaakov went only till Sukkos, and he didn't go all the way to Sar, which that delayed Esav herding Yaakov, because he thought he's coming there, but really he got off earlier, and he went only till Sukkos. As the Gemara illustrates, there was an incident with the students of Rabbi Kiva, that they were on their way to Kiziv. Poguben Listim, which is the name of a place. Now, bandits encountered these students. Amalhem, they said to the students, Lanatahelchem, where are you going to? So Amalhem, La'akwe, they said they're going to Akwe, which is further than Kiziv. Now, Kivin Shagil Kiziv, Pirshabah, once they got to Kiziv, they separated. They're already on the exit ramp. Amalhem, so the bandits said to them, Tamid Miatim, whose students are you? Amalhan, they said to them, Tamid Rabbi Kiva, the students of Rabbi Kiva. Amalhan, so they said to them, Ashe Rabbi Kiva, Tamid, praiseworthy are is Rabbi Kiva and the students. Shlei Paga ben Odom Ram Oilam, that a evil person never does anything bad to them, because you see how smart they were, that they maybe would have hurt them later on, but they went and they got off and without them knowing, because they thought they were going to a later distance. Now, similarly, there was a story. Rabbi Nash Shav Ozel, Rabbi Nash was going as Gatin Tabachovav Manalev, Beit Tirasa, to this place called Beit Tirasa. Pogu Beit Ganavi, so robbers encountered him. Amrle, they said to him, Lon Ka'aslus, where are you going to? Amrlen Le Pumbadisa, he said he's going to a further place, to Pumbadisa. Kimat to Le Beit Tirasa, Parsh, when he got to Beit Tirasa, he separated from them. Amrle, they said to him, Tamid the Yehuda Ramaat, you're a student of the crafty, trickery Yehuda, because he was a student of Rav Yehuda. And they called him a Ramah, because it's from your teacher that you learned how to be crafty. Because these are Jewish bandits, they knew about the Jewish culture. So Amalahu, he said to them, Yedei Sulei, you know regarding my teacher of Yehuda that he's a Ramah? How can you say such a thing? Yehi Rava, de lahava hanu inshi b'sham, to let it be the will of Hashem, that these men, meaning these Ganavim, should be in excommunication, because, meaning when he said b'shamte, in the excommunication of his teacher of Yehuda, because since his teacher was a great person, he felt that his excommunication would take effect, so he cursed them with his teacher's excommunication. So they kept up their job of robbers for the next 22 years, and they weren't successful. Now, Kim and the Chazal, once they saw that it must have been the Shamta of Rabbi Yehuda, Asukulu Tava Shamtai, they all came to beg for the annulment of the excommunication. Now, but the Havabuhu Chad Girdana, the Leosu Lisharu Yeshamti, was one weaver who didn't come and submit himself to beg for forgiveness to undo that excommunication. And Ochli Arya and a lion ate him up. This is what people say, Girdana de Loi Taizen, a weaver who's not humble, because generally weavers are people that are not, and they're not shameful people, and they're more, and they have this sense of aggrandizement. There's not someone that's going to be come and humble himself to have forgiveness. Shasa bitzir mishne, he decreased his years from his life because he didn't ask for forgiveness, he was eaten up by a lion. Says the Gemara, reflecting regarding these last two incidents that we mentioned, Tachazi ma ben ganavi bavel, come and see what's the difference between the robbers of bavel, where when they encountered Rav Menashe, they were so disgraceful to embarrass a great person like Rav Yehuda. But listen, there Eretz Yisrael, in contrast to the bandits of Eretz Yisrael, where when they encountered the students of Rabbi Kiva, they spoke about the praise of Rabbi Kiva, how smart they were that they got away from these bandits, even though they generally list them, bandits are more lower class than robbers, which comes to teach us the praise of Eretz Yisrael, that even the bandits of Eretz Yisrael were more noble than the generally the higher class Ganavim in Bavel, who were more disgraceful when they found out that they were duped by the Talmidei Chachamim not to get tricked and robbed by the robbers.